On this episode of the GeoTrek podcast, we meet with Emily Gracie, meteorologist and host of Off the Radar podcast, as well as digital content creator with the National Weather Desk. She wears a lot of hats. She's going to share with us her insights on how to better connect and engage with your audience. Hey everyone, I'm Hurricane Hal, host of the GeoTrek podcast, where we explore the world to bring you stories about extreme weather and natural disasters not covered by the mainstream media. You are going to love this conversation with Emily Gracie. She's bringing insights from her 22-year career about how to better connect and engage with your audience while staying true to yourself and continuing to develop authentic content. You're going to love it. Stay tuned for this. But before we do that, I wanted to mention, don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow the GeoTrek podcast on your favorite podcast platform, as well as our content on social media. Don't miss out on our YouTube channel. You can actually see these conversations in video form at GeoTrek YouTube. Well, without further introduction, let's jump into this amazing conversation with Emily Gracie. Emily, so excited to chat with you here on the GeoTrek podcast.
I'm so honored. This was such a great invite. Thank you, Hal.
Well, Emily, I mean, I can't wait to talk to you. You wear so many different hats, from meteorologist to podcast host and producer and editor to digital content producer for the National Weather Desk. I mean, you do a lot, and we're going to break down all of that in this episode. But let's start out with your role and your passion for meteorology. What sparked your interest in the field of meteorology?
Oh, gosh. That goes way back. I mean, I don't think I have a very original story for you. I think like every kid who was a teenager in the 90s, I saw Twister and, you know, was like, wow, that's a career. You can chase tornadoes for a living. That sounds amazing. So that was kind of how I got started on this path. But it has definitely kind of pivoted from there. And I wound up going towards broadcasting in college, but have definitely taken on some other little roles along the way as well. So yeah, I would say Twister and then just kind of weather in general. I was always good at math and science. And so the fact that I found out after that, that meteorology was an actual major, then I kind of narrowed in on that when I went away to college. And then after that, I was like, I'll figure it out as I go.
Yeah, I think all of us were like so engaged with Twister and we're like, wait, we want to do that. We want to storm chase on the plains. And then it sounds like, you know, you followed that into studies in meteorology and sciences. And I want to talk to you also about your early days as a young professional. I know your professional path took you to working with local and national TV. I mean, share with us, like, where did you work and what did those experiences teach you?
So interestingly enough, my first job was actually with the Weather Channel. So I always joke that like I started national and then I kind of worked my way up to a very small local TV station. But so I interned in college. I went to UNC Asheville, interned in college with a local TV station. It happened that the chief meteorologist at that station in Asheville went on to work at the Weather Channel right about the same time I graduated. So I was very fortunate. I don't know if you know Mike Bettis. He recommended me for a part-time overnight weather producing job at the Weather Channel. So that's what I did. I made graphics at the Weather Channel. That was my very first job. It was an amazing experience. It was also during like around 2004, 2005, which was a pretty active hurricane season. And so I learned a lot on the job, working overnights, seeing these hurricanes make landfall. I was in so far over my head and didn't know what I was doing, but it was a great learning experience.
Wait, I have that. Were you just like starstruck? I mean, these were like, yeah, you know, meteorologist celebrities that you were hanging out with as a, you know, early 20s, right?
It was wild because I didn't grow up with cable, so I didn't really watch the Weather Channel growing up. But in college, we did. It was on all the time. And I remember watching, like, you know, Christina Abernathy and thinking, like, I'm going to grow up to be just like her. And so when I started working with her and then I became friends with her, it was wild. There was like that transition of like, okay, be cool. You're going to lunch with Christina Abernathy, like, be cool. But yeah, it was such a great, surreal learning experience on not just like how to be a meteorologist, but how to be like a human being, how to handle people out in public. Like, it was amazing.
I mean, that's just an amazing experience to have right out of college like that. You know, what a great experience. And then it sounds like you went from the Weather Channel, then started working more like locally and regionally after that.
I did. I actually pivoted away from TV for a little bit. I never really moved for a job. I always moved to locations based on, you know, what was going on with my life at the time, with my relationship at the time, and then found jobs wherever I was. And so after that, I actually went to work for the American Meteorological Society. I worked in education for a little while, their education program. So I did some work for them in D.C., and then I did kind of get back into broadcasting, but not in an on-air sense. I was a weather producer for a local station in Baltimore. And then I think I just kind of got thrown in on air at some point. And so my first experience being on TV was in like a larger market in Baltimore. And I stayed in Baltimore for about 10 years at a couple of different stations there before moving to Charleston, South Carolina.
Wow. So that's really interesting. Just the different geographies, but also different roles and, you know, I guess platforms and audience sizes that you had in these early roles that you had.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because when I was in Baltimore, too, I actually taught at a community college. They had an intro to meteorology class that they were doing for their air traffic controllers. So that was a great experience because I got to be in the academic world. I used some of the stuff that I was doing with AMS and transitioned that into teaching. And so that was a lot of fun. I don't know that I would want to do that long term. It was very intimidating and a lot of work, the teaching. But it was a great experience because I had a lot of students that were pilots, too. And so they would take me up flying and in their Cessnas. And it was very interesting.
Oh, that's fascinating. And then, you know, aviation weather is a whole different angle. I mean, it overlaps with mainstream meteorology, but there's all these, you know, nuances to it as well. That's fascinating. I wanted to talk about then like getting into the work you've done. You've done amazing work and made a huge contribution as a communicator. And you focus so much of your work on storytelling. Explain to us, you know, why is storytelling so vital in the field of meteorology?
Yeah, I mean, it's a science field, right? And we are all scientists. And I think that a lot of times we tend to try to tell our story based in fact, which is great. We want to do that. But you also have to touch into some sort of emotion. You have to tell people the why you should care, why this matters, who it's impacted. And by doing that, by telling a story and bringing in real people, you can do that. You can make a bigger impact than, say, facts and figures and charts. I mean, if we look at climate change that way, right? Like people show charts, they show here's a warming trend. But I don't think that really connects with people. I think it can be scary, it can be impactful, but I don't know that it really makes a difference as far as making them make a lifestyle change or making them make a decision differently or take a different action. So having that storytelling aspect, it's almost like listening to a really good song, right? Like if you read the song, you may not really feel it, but if you hear it and you hear it over and over again and the music that goes with it, it is going to have a bigger impact. It's going to tell the story a little bit better. So I just think the whole package of what can you do to make this more impactful to a bigger group of people, and storytelling is a good way to do that. We all listen to stories when we were kids, right? That's how we learned.
You know, you're right. And then it connects people in with seeing like why they should care. You know, I noticed along the way, I'm kind of a facts and figures and statistics guy, but I noticed when I started consuming more meteorology, you know, media, a lot of times it starts with the story of a farmer or someone that their home was hit by a tornado. And then it zooms back out to the statistics and the trends, you know, but it kind of starts with that personal piece. I think that maybe helps connect us to that story and why this matters, right?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can get and do you ever notice like when you're in a lecture listening to people talk about facts and figures and science-based information, sometimes I zone out. Even though I am a scientist, I'll zone out a little bit. But if you hear a personal story of how someone was impacted, how that farmer was impacted, or how somebody was impacted by a hurricane, it's so much more impactful. And I see that trend too. Like when I talk to people like the Hurricane Center, you know, they're actually listening to stories of victims, because it's not just about how high was the storm surge or how fast were the winds or how many people died. They want to hear from a specific person, like, why did you make that decision that you made? Why did you leave? Why did you stay? Yeah. Why, you know, why did you do this? It helps them make their decisions better.
Yeah, and I think it helps connect us in with the human experience. We feel more connected to the story as opposed to, you know, facts, figures, and statistics. I think we only have so much capacity for that. Emily, yeah. One of the great ways that you have done so much amazing storytelling is through your podcast, Off the Radar. You host it, you produce it, you edit it. I'm amazed that you wear all these hats for the podcast. Tell us a little bit about the Off the Radar podcast.
Sure. I mean, it really draws in what we were just talking about, the storytelling. It is, you know, here's some information. A lot of times it starts with, I saw a new study, or I saw something that was interesting to me, new research that came out, or I met somebody at a conference like yourself, and they gave a talk that was really cool. And I think that the public should know about it. So I'll find some sort of theme, and then I'll think about how can I draw in a current news situation or a narrative or a historical, you know, narrative of something that happened way back when. Like with yours, it was, we're going to talk about the top 10 storm surges in recent American history, but let's start with a story of here's the Galveston hurricane and here's why storm surge matters and here's why you should care about the top 10 storm surges in American history. So it's tying in that new research, new information, making it digestible to not just scientists, but to the general American public, and then making them feel something about it, whether it's sadness, laughter, you know, anger, making them feel something about that so that they do digest it more, so that they do take an action, perhaps.
That's interesting. So it sounds like sometimes you'll start with like, wow, this is a really interesting story, or this is a really interesting phenomenon. But then you'll kind of build in these human pieces to it to make it relatable to your audience.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, it's funny because I get a lot of suggestions from people, too, of what they want to learn about. Like, I want to learn about earthquakes. So that's something I'm kind of diving into right now. It's not weather related, but it's, you know, it's science, it's earth science. So that's what I'm looking at now is like, let's do an episode on earthquakes, but let's narrow it down and start with like, okay, there have been a series of earthquakes in South Carolina in the past month. Like, are earthquakes predictable? Is there something bigger coming? Is this a zone that we should be worried about? Where are the zones we should be worried about? And the fun part for me and the easy part for me is that, like, I have all these questions I want to know. So while I do these weather related episodes, a lot of times I already know what's going on with weather. It's easier for me to do these episodes about like different earth sciences or about space because I do want to know about them. So I can ask the questions that I think other people are probably curious about, too. So I just want to know these things, and I get very self-indulgent on these topics that I want to learn about. And then I also get to pull in really cool guests, like people I just want to meet and learn from, and they're so excited to be on a podcast and I'm so excited to learn from them.
Well, I think that's what keeps the Off the Radar podcast so authentic. Like, you are so into it and you're learning sometimes alongside your audience, right? I mean, you're like, sure. This is fascinating for you as well.
Yeah. I did an episode on space junk and that one blew my mind. Like, what's going on with space junk and what's floating around out there? I was blown away. And I think that's what made that episode so fun, is like the shock on my face throughout it.
Yeah, you were like hearing some of these shocking things while your audience was as well. Emily, I mean, the field of podcasting is just blowing up. So there's a lot, you know, every week there's new podcasts coming out. What advice would you give for young podcasters just starting out?
You know, it's funny. I gave a talk at the American Meteorological Society recently about podcasting. And I think my biggest advice is, you just said it, authenticity, like being authentic, being yourself. I think you can listen to other podcasts and draw from those podcasts what you like about them into your own. But the cool thing about podcasting is it's kind of limitless what you can do, what the format is, what you want to talk about. And so as long as you stay true to yourself and come up with something unique and authentically you, I think that you can be successful in it. I think also it's important to know the time that it does require, and that it can be something that perhaps doesn't make money, but can be a real addition to like a bigger brand. It can be a great way to get some sort of message out there. But it can be time consuming. It's not something you can just do on the side very easily. It takes time. You do have to market the heck out of it. You have to tell people about it or else nobody will listen. It's not like it's just on TV and people are flipping through and they happen upon it. They have to go find a podcast. And so you have to tell them about it over and over and over again.
For sure. You know, and as you know, it's a huge time commitment. I keep coming back to the fact that it kind of helps. It just helps me. Or in some weeks I'm already overloaded and I'm like, oh, do I have time for a podcast? But it almost forces me to network and just to keep expanding my professional network and who I'm reaching out to. I'm sure you see that a lot, right? You're just constantly meeting new people and delving into these areas you wouldn't have maybe stepped into, right?
Yeah, for sure. And you know, it's interesting because when we started the podcast with my company, I think the thought process was this is going to be on the side. Like you will focus on TV interviews, and then whatever the best of will become the podcast. But it's actually become a little bit the opposite, where the podcast has become my full-time job. And all this stuff stems out of it. Like it might, you know, if I do an interview, it might, there might be some clip that comes out where it's beneficial to run that clip on our digital or on our TV show. So the podcast is just this big lump of content. And then I can always go back to an interview. Like if, you know, there's a hurricane that hit somewhere that you and I talked about, I can go back to that interview with you, pull a clip easily, run that in our TV show or run it on digital and make it relevant. So it's definitely went from being the side gig to the main gig. And then everything else kind of trickles out from there.
Well, Emily, this is a perfect segue into, you know, you and your team, you're doing obviously a lot with the Off the Radar podcast, but then you and your team and your colleagues are doing a lot with digital content creation. You and I have talked about the role of the media meteorologist, where you're not just forecasting on the evening news anymore. A lot of meteorologists now are on different digital platforms. You see them everywhere, right? On all these different apps, all these different platforms. You were mentioning there how in some ways your podcast can really interact or engage with a lot of this digital content creation as well and kind of cross promote. Or could you explain a little bit more about how all that works?
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole podcast episode in itself. And I know I've seen you've spoken to Joe Martucci, who has been a great, you know, he's been great as far as the digital space and kind of creating standards for people to live up to when it comes to this digital space. But yeah, podcasting is digital. I think that a lot of people don't realize that it's part of the digital space. And there has been this transition. There's been a lot of fights on Twitter or X about it. But it's so important that we show our faces, that degreed meteorologists show your faces in whatever way makes you comfortable. And I think that's important to note too, is, you know, when people think digital meteorology, I think they think you have to be glued to your computer, breaking weather, covering storms, covering, you know, landfalling hurricanes. That's not my deal. My deal is more weather education, weather excitement, covering weather news, weather storytelling, as we talked about. It is just a different type of digital, but I think everybody does have to show up. And instead of fighting the digital revolution, I think you got to hop on board. And I tell students that over and over again. I told them this when we were in Houston for the AMS conference this year, like this is what you need to be preparing for is the digital meteorology, because the TV is just getting, it's getting more and more on the back burner, or it's merging. It's, you know, it's not something that can be number one anymore. Digital has to be the number one. And I think we're going to run into this changeover from chief meteorologists at TV stations becoming more, you know, digital weather content creators. And they're going to be the big person at the station. And they're going to be in charge of, you know, the people that are doing the TV shows. It's all going to be changing. And digital is not going to be the second anymore. It's going to be the first.
That's really fascinating. I like what you said there about making it your own and doing what you're comfortable with, though. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're saying you don't necessarily have to be covering that tornado outbreak in Nebraska at 11:30 on a Saturday night. Like maybe there are going to be digital meteorologists that are on that storm, but it sounds like you're saying for others, maybe you're going to take a different angle where it's more educational or more, you know, maybe more, I don't want to say scheduled, but maybe where you're not covering breaking weather around the nation 24/7, right?
Correct. And I think that's really important to note as a female meteorologist, too, and as a mother, because I don't have time for that. Like, I don't have the capability, the bandwidth, and I'm not going to leave my kids, you know, baseball game to go do that. And so I've actually spoken to probably at least 5 female meteorologists in the past month who are at a crossroads in their career saying, do I have to do this or do I have to pick one or the other? And I'm saying, no, you don't. Like, pick your own path, because there is something that you're bringing to the table that other people can't. So pick that path and make your own path.
And Emily, that's a good point. I mean, you're bringing credibility and reliability to a large audience. I'm sure there are times where you're at a baseball game or at a, you know, doing something with your kids and your phone's blowing up. Like, what about this tornado watcher? Right. I mean, so do you just have like kind of really good boundaries with that? And like, you know, scheduling out kind of when you're on and when you're off kind of thing. Like, what advice do you have on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, and with what I do now, I have had to transition and take that like sense of urgency away from myself, because I don't do TV weather anymore. So I don't have to be covering it digitally, because that's not my thing. There are other people that are doing that. That's not my thing. It's not even the National Weather Desk's thing. So our thing is, you know, educating people around what happened. So yes, there was a tornado outbreak over the weekend. Let's pull from one of our local meteorologists to teach you what happened here. There's more, maybe even forensics involved or cool video involved. It's not that breaking weather sense of urgency. So There's definitely different ways to cover the weather. And I'm very grateful that there are people out there that are covering breaking weather, because I don't want to do it.
You know, Emily, it was interesting. Last summer, I just got in the car to drive from Texas to Colorado with my family for like a 1 week vacation. It was, you know, my wife and I had 2 kids in the car, and all of a sudden the Texas Hill Country flood breaks. And I remember I'm so excited about the family vacation, but then I'm like, I would absolutely be on this story, but like we have 400 more miles to drive today. I mean, do I pull over and I'm just doing weather while my wife and kids sit there? You know, how do you handle this? And I realized in that moment, hang on a second, kind of what you said, others are covering it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I saw Travis Herzog from ABC in Houston. He was doing great coverage. I pulled over. I typed out 3 sentences. Hey, if y'all are covering this, check out what Travis, you know, and in 2 minutes, I was able to connect my audience with him who is covering it, but was able to keep those boundaries and still, you know, enjoy that family vacation. And, you know, maybe we're in that age where you really need to connect with others and sometimes just have that boundary where it's like, sorry, the timing is such, you know, we're on family vacation this week or whatever.
I love that so much, because it also takes away that level of competition that our field somehow, for some reason, has. There's this level of competition. You see it on social media. You see people tearing each other down when we should be doing that. This is so much better. Like, use what you do well and shine during that time, and then help somebody else shine during their time. So I love that. And I think that's kind of the new frontier with digital, too, is, hey, let's lift up the person that's doing a great job covering this. And then later, I'm going to go look at this in a different angle and give you something that's different about the Texas flooding, give a humanity angle or give a social science angle, something different. But yeah, making somebody shine when they should be shining rather than all of these people fighting for the top at the same time.
Well, you know, and one of the challenges with digital, 30 years ago, you'd be like, well, I'm not on shift at the TV station tonight, so that's not my responsibility. Today, we literally could cover any event at any time. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of, you know, I was so stressed out. I was like, oh my gosh, how do I do this? And I was like, hang on a second. Travis is knocking it out of the park. Let me just connect my audience with him. But it ties in with what you're saying, especially I think as a mom, it's like, how do I have a successful career, but still protect that time with my family?
Yeah. And use it to your advantage too. You know, like, being a mom has made me better at my job. It's made me, you know, I got on after the Texas flooding. I got on with Kim Cloco McLean. Do you know who she is? She's an amazing social scientist. She's also a mom. We talked about, as mothers, what this experience was like and how we as a field of meteorologists can be better prepared for the next disaster like this, and talk about flooding in a way that's impactful to people and families and people on vacation. So using that as, you know, more of a superpower than something that traditionally has held parents or mothers back, you know?
Well, and Emily, I love that angle, because how many moms and dads out there heard about missing summer campers and all of a sudden the grief of that, it sounds like engaging with like, okay, how do we process this? How do we be better weather prepared? But you know, so many people were sharing flood levels and information about the amount of rainfall. It sounds like you found these different angles, you and your team and colleagues, of how do you get this human element into a story?
Yeah. Yeah. Cause weather people share the science, reporters share the people. There's this space in between that we can work together on.
Emily, I'm really interested to hear your perspective. Like, where's the future going with all of this, with podcasting, with digital media platforms? I mean, where are we going, say, in the next 10 to 15 years?
That's a really good question, Hal. And I think it could go a couple of different directions. You know, I think like our climate, it could go terribly wrong or it could go incredibly. We could use people like you who are lifting up someone who's doing a great job on digital and then shining when you need to shine. I think if we work together, it could be amazing. There could be so much beneficial information going out to the public if we start letting each other shine. If we continue to fight on X and tear people down or have discussions where we're throwing other meteorologists under the bus, it's going to continue to build distrust with the public. And that is a scary place to be because there's already distrust. You know, we're already joked about as far as accuracy or trustworthiness. So I think the important thing is respect among colleagues in the field, and that could lead to some really, really great discussions. And I think continuing to have podcasts where we talk to each other, continuing to go to conferences where we talk to each other, and continuing to talk to the public and not have these divisive views, but listening to everybody is the key. Listening more than we talk.
Emily, you know, something I'm learning from you on this episode is just the value of collaborating with others, of lifting others up instead of tearing them down. And I wanted to hear from you. I mean, I know you're on your podcast, you do an amazing job with that. You mentioned going to conferences and workshops. I mean, what are some different ways, say, your young professionals coming into the field, if they say, how do I make these connections? How do I make these relationships? What are some things they should be doing that they can collaborate with others and help build others up?
I think, for one, the conferences, I think they can be intimidating because they sound expensive, but there's so many great student opportunities, especially with the AMS conferences. Apply for grants, become a student member of AMS. I met you at the National Tropical Weather Conference. That was the first time I had ever been there. I would not have met you and I wouldn't have met all these amazing storm chasers if I had not gone. And I think previously I had been intimidated, like this was, you know, a certain group of people that maybe I wasn't welcome. I was so wrong. So take a chance, meet people, walk up, introduce yourself, send an email, reach out on LinkedIn, just say hi. I've had a lot of students reach out on LinkedIn and just say hi, send me their stuff. And I remember them and it leads to, you know, great discussions. And also the students I've met at these AMS conferences, they're in the field working now. They're doing great things. The more they're networking, the more they're going to have these amazing opportunities. And they're the next leaders. They're taking over these chair roles, these committee roles. So it's really exciting to see.
I hear you saying, like, don't be afraid to take initiative, whether it's going up to a stranger at a conference and shaking their hand or reaching out to someone on LinkedIn. It sounds like just taking those, I guess, low level risks, right? Worst case scenario, Someone says, hey, I don't have time to talk to you. Okay, it's not the end of the world, but taking that initiative and putting yourself out there.
Yeah. And I think most people are really happy to help someone, you know, because it allows us to be a little bit like, oh, look at me. Like, somebody wants my help, I must be important, you know? So it makes
We got a couple minutes left. I'm just going to ask you a few free flowing questions here. What are your favorite kind of stories to cover?
Obviously weather. I think weather. I like the emotional stories, but they can be a little exhausting, especially during the editing process. Sometimes when you're editing heavy stuff like the Texas flooding, it can weigh on you a lot. So those are tough weeks, but they're very fulfilling. The fun ones though, like really fun weather stories, especially anything involving an airplane, like, so Hurricane Hunter stories, turbulence stories, they're just kind of extreme and fun and scary and remind me of why I got into this business. So those are always fun. And then also if I get to like interview, even if it's like a B-list celebrity, someone in my eyes that I think is super cool, I'm blown away by that. So.
Oh, for sure. You know, and the weather impacts everything. So you get into all these other sectors as well, right? It's not just meteorology that you're talking to.
You can take a spin on anything. Like I've definitely put a spin on some things where I'm like, oh, is that really weather related? But everything is weather related. So yes is the answer.
Well, and you mentioned even like earthquakes, volcanoes. Yeah. You'll see that content show up on National Geographic or the Weather Channel because it's earth science, right? The people interested in weather are interested in an earthquake or a volcano, right?
For sure. And it does, like, Earth and the volcanoes do impact weather. It is a weather story. You know, there's stuff going up in the atmosphere. It does affect weather systems. So it becomes a weather story.
For sure. Emily, how can people, I know our listeners are going to love this episode. How can our listeners find you on these different platforms? How can they find your podcast?
Yeah. So Off the Radar, if you search that, that's my main podcast. It's the one I do under my employer, the National Weather Desk. I just started a new little mini podcast with my friend Karen. It's a 10-minute weekly weather brief is what that's called. It comes out on Fridays. That's a fun one to download as well. It's on all the major platforms. The best way to reach me is on LinkedIn, I would say, rather than spouting off my work email address. Just find me on LinkedIn. I'm very active on there. It's where I find a lot of my story ideas too, and where I meet a lot of people in the industry. I'm on X as well, but I would say LinkedIn is the best place to reach me.
Well, Emily, I've learned a lot from you about science communication, weather communication, passion for reaching out to others, and I love listening to your podcast. As we wrap up this episode of the GeoTrek podcast, what's one last take-home message you'd like to share with our audience?
Oh, that's tough, Hal. Smile and be kind and be a good listener, I would say.
That's right. And have fun with it, right? I know when I'm having fun, it's just everybody's having a better time all around, I think, right?
I know. That's why I love talking to you. We have great conversations. So I'm appreciative of you.
We do. Well, thanks, Emily, for coming on the podcast. Looking forward to seeing you at more conferences and workshops. And keep up the great work. I know our listeners will love following you in the future.
Awesome. Thank you, Al.
Emily, thank you so much for taking time to come on the GeoTrek podcast and share amazing insights with us. I got so much out of this podcast. Three main take-home points I walked away with. Number one, the importance of the human element in storytelling related to weather broadcasts and weather stories. Emily does an amazing job with this on the Off the Radar podcast, bringing it back to people, which at the end of the day makes the point of why we should care about these stories. A lot of times in weather communication, we quickly get into statistics and numbers, talking about temperatures and water levels and wind speeds. But at the end of the day, it really comes back to the people. Emily had really good insights on that on this podcast. And you can really see that in her work at the National Weather Desk and on the Off the Radar podcast. Number two, I loved her insights on being yourself, being true to yourself, being authentic. She mentioned as a mom, sometimes she doesn't have availability to cover every breaking weather event out there, but she does a really good job at taking the angles that are given to her. In fact, she said she's had professional conversations and been able to advance the conversation with other moms and other women working in the field of meteorology. I love that because I know I love getting out storm chasing and covering breaking storms, but as a dad, I can't be out there on every storm. You look for the opportunities you have. But I love her insight about being true to yourself, being authentic to yourself, and even protecting that time as a family, having some boundaries there. You'll have plenty of opportunities to do great work. Lastly, I love what Emily shared about the importance of working together, collaborating together, and not competing with each other. We see a lot of competition in the weather space. And in fact, off mic, Emily and I talked about this. Where did this hyper-competitiveness come in the weather field? And she had a good point. She said, if you go back in time several decades ago, often weather information was coming through TV media in a market, for example, in a given city, there might only be two or three TV stations. And so they really had to be a bit cutthroat and competitive with each other. Now with digital social media platforms, there's plenty of room for all of us to work together, to collaborate, and to build each other up. And she made a really good point of that on this podcast. Emily, thanks again so much for joining us on the GeoTrek podcast. We're excited to continue following your content at the National Weather Desk and, of course, at your podcast, Off the Radar. Thanks again also to our listeners for your continued support and engagement with us at the GeoTrek podcast, consistently helping make us in the top three rated podcasts on the topic of natural disasters. Well, stay safe, everyone. Keep collaborating and working together with all those positive vibes that Emily shared on this podcast. I'm your host, Hurricane Hal, and I'll catch you on the next episode of the GeoTrek podcast.